Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome into No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner, along with my co-host, Will Lomas, and we're here to break down and kind of recap the Titans' preseason game against the Buccaneers, which they won 13-3. Malik Willis got another start. We didn't see Tannehill, didn't see Derrick Henry, haven't seen some of the other Titans starters. But it's good to get back on the winning side after losing the opener to the preseason juggernaut that is the Baltimore Ravens. It's good. It's been just a good experience for a lot of these Titans players. I think particularly Malik Willis getting these two starts. I think it points to the Titans really wanting to get him experience. And I think he's kind of pushed past Legan Woodside for the backup job, but we'll get into Malik Willis in a little bit. I want to go to you, Will, if you want to maybe tell me if anyone in particular stood out to you in this game, if any player, earned maybe not a starting job, but more playing time or maybe pushed someone out from the second or third string spot.
Yeah, so full disclosure, it's a weird game because so much of the narrative turned into like how Dylan Raidens was doing, and we can talk about that later. But people forget that Kyle Phillips was an absolute lightning bolt. Like, I think somebody said that he averaged 18 yards a punt return. Like, the Titans have had kick returners who haven't averaged that. Like, it's supposedly the best number of anybody who's returned three or more punts all preseason. He looks awesome. Like, it's why it's so frustrating that we haven't been able to see him catch passes other than like the toe drag when he did for the first down and those kinds of things. Like, we haven't been able to see him with space in front of him because he looks the part for sure. So number one has to be Phillips, just because he continues to make every opportunity count. Another guy that we should talk about is Rashad Weaver. Like, this time last year, everybody was starting to catch on that Rashad Weaver looked like a powerhouse. And, you know, there were some concerns that his injury might have set him back. But, I mean, he looks great. You know, he's added a little bit of bend to his game, which is what he got that, you know, forced fumble or that sack through a hole. I can't remember if it was a forced fumble or not. But he had that one. And then, I mean, he was just constantly – he hit the arm of – I think it was Trask – because I don't think Gabbert was in. I think it was Trask that he hit his arm and it turned into an interception. And if the quarterback held onto the ball for more than, 3 seconds, he had the right tackle like in his lap. And that was whether it was the first guy, the second guy, the third guy, because he's had to play so many snaps because they seem to be wanting him to just play against the right tackle. And I don't know if that's a stylistic thing. I know Harold Landry predominantly lines up on one side, so maybe they're trying to kind of even that out to say, like, okay, we want these guys to line up here, and then we can set the defense around that, and then we can move them to a wide nine, or for Harold Landry, it's like we can move them off ball. But it was pretty much him on the right side and Bud Dupree slash Ola Daniel against the left tackle. So because they're not starting a lot of those guys in front of him, like you talked about with Autry and Landry, he's getting, you know, a ton of snaps, and he never looks fatigued. You know, he plays the run as hard as he plays the pass. Like, it, I think on that, so there were a lot of near turnovers, kind of jumping around points here because he did so much. There was a turnover later after the Caleb Farley, like, recovery of the fumble out of bounds, which is just bad luck because, you know, Kalu did a nice job knocking it out and Farley did a nice job being there. But then later, somebody causes a fumble and Rashad Weaver went from getting upfield on a run play, then getting 10 yards down the field to recover the fumble. Like, he just pops up everywhere. So those two probably had the best standout days. But, you know, they're in weird positions because it's like Kyle Phillips is probably going to be limited to the slot. Like, it's where he thrives. But how much is Mike Vrabel when the season actually starts and it matters? Like, how much is he going to use a slot receiver? Like, he's going to push for two tight ends as much as he can. And then with Weaver, like, I mean, I don't remember a time where Harold Landry came off the field willingly. Like, it just doesn't happen all that much. So, I mean, maybe they pull Autry, you know, in and out and try that. But I don't know. They're going to have some really good guys who are sitting on the bench for a lot of plays just because they don't necessarily fit into, you know, immediate playing time situations. But those two looked great.
Completely agree on Kyle Phillips. I agree on Weaver also, but I don't know if there's any tight end that has had a better offseason than Kyle Phillips. I mean, the reports have been glowing. It's shown up in the games. He looks like an electric punt returner. He's going to be able to help the Titans from day one. I even saw today, I think it was it Peter Schrager? Or was it, I can't remember if it was Peter Schrager or Kyle Brandt.
They're the same guy.
Right? They were the same person.
I was like, you got to be thinking of Kyle Brandt too. They're the same person. I don't know which one it was either.
I think it was one of them. Anyway, they were going through the top five rookie receivers that they've heard the most buzz on. Number one was some guy named Lance McCutcheon. I actually haven't heard of him. But Kyle Phillips made that list, and considering how deep the wide receiver class, rookie wide receiver class is this year, I think that speaks volumes to how the Titans feel about him and how the national media has even kind of caught on to a little bit of his hype. So, I heard this,
just to interrupt you a little bit, but I heard Mike Keith say this, and I'd seen, I think Mike Miracles tweeted it during the draft, but, that Mike Keith was saying that the AJ Brown trade turned into Treylon Burks, Roger McCreary, and Kyle Phillips, which is a pretty fantastic. Oh, and it might have also been Nicholas Petit-Frere too, now that I think about it. So, like, it's a, you know, it's never great. You never feel great trading, you know, a Pro Bowl talent. But if you're going to get those guys back, like, that is starting to look like fair compensation.
I don't know. According to every NFL and every Eagles fan, we swapped A.J. Brown for Treylon Burks straight up, and there was nothing else that went on in that trade. But anyway, we're not going to get into that. Yeah, so that was Phillips. I agree with you on Weaver. He looks like a monster. I mean, he looked like every time he's been on the field, he looks like a monster from college to last year's preseason to preseason this year. Really hope he stays healthy because that, oh my God, that defensive line looks like just a beast of a defensive line yet again. And it seems like they're only going to get better because all they've done is add pieces to it. And even like you mentioned Adeni that was playing with Weaver, David Anenye again, just like keeps making plays. He got another sack. I think the Titans might have to keep five edges if they can, but then you look at the defensive tackles. Like Naquan Jones is still balling. Tyre Tart looks good again. DeMarcus Walker looks good. Deshaun Hand even had a really great game. I don't know how they're going to find space for a lot of these defensive linemen. They're going to have to make some pretty tough cut decisions. It's not even only on the defensive line. Like Joshua Kalu might have been the best tight end on the field in this preseason Johnson. Game.
Like yeah, Lonnie Johnson came out too. Of nowhere. And yeah. Like they just signed him, and it turns out he had like an interception in practice. And then I think he might have been the one that forced the fumble earlier that I was talking about, the Rashad Weaver recovery.
I think you're right. He's looked good.
So, you know, I don't know if they're going to have to put some guys on the PUP list, because you could technically put Monty Rice on the PUP list. And, you know, if Elijah Molden keeps kind of staying a little bit banged up or whatever, and Theo Jackson, too, like you can say, OK, like we're going to put y'all basically what they did to start last season, where they bent the rules a little bit to keep guys on the roster. But eventually they'll have to make some decisions. But it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, they have other safeties who's like Adrian Colbert is fine. He's a decent veteran. They just traded for Tyree Gillespie. He played a little bit in this game. And then you have the linebackers who I thought played pretty well. Chance Campbell, I didn't like what he did in the first game, but I thought he played a little bit better in this one. And Jack Gibbons looks like a pretty good backup linebacker to have. He is super quick and can cover tight ends if needed. So the Titans just have insane depth on the defensive side of the ball.
And Campbell, you know, I'd completely forgotten about this, but I said something on Twitter about how he just looked different. Like, you know, he looked so much more relaxed and so much more comfortable, like, playing. And I don't know if it was because the Ravens play such a different system and they're not used to see it, you know, in college, he wasn't used to seeing that two tight end set, like at pulling guard, like big package that they saw, because he looked confusing is the wrong word, but like it looked like there was something the matter with his reads and they couldn't fix it on the fly. I mean, this week he had a tackle for loss and then he had a tipped pass where it was almost like that David Long tipped pass from last year, where it was just like, you're looking at that guy and you're thinking that ball is absolutely over his head, and he just goes up like with one arm and tips it enough to where, you know, as soon as it hits him, it's automatically like, okay, are we going to get an interception? So that was very promising to see, because, you know, like you said last week, it looked like he was on the fast train to getting cut. And now, I mean, I don't know if he necessarily makes the team, but he's definitely going to be either on their team or on the practice squad.
Yeah. I mean, if they could get him on the practice squad, I think that's probably what they're going to want to do. They're probably going to want to do that with a couple players. And unfortunately, they're going to have to lose some of them because there's just a limited amount of spots on the roster. And teams are always looking out for guys who get waived, and the team is trying to stash them and they pick them up. So we'll see what the Titans do over the next couple of weeks and what they decide to do with their roster, how many positions they keep. So we'll see. We're going to take a quick ad break here, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the offense, since the intro was a little defense centric, although we do have a discussion that could be had about the cornerbacks. So we're going to go to a quick ad break and then we'll be right back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew.
Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. So, second preseason game for the Titans, second game in which Malik Willis starts ahead of Logan Woodside. I don't think anyone was really too surprised by it. I would say that before the preseason started, I would have probably imagined that Woodside would at least get one start and probably Malik Willis get the other start in the other game, assuming Tannehill wouldn't have played. But I think it's good that Malik Willis has been able to get that opportunity because he needs reps. Like, he needs live reps. He needs to see what's happening in front of him. He needs to feel what, you know, an actual NFL game environment is like. I know the preseason isn't the top level, but the Bucs are a very talented team. They have a lot of depth. They have a good defensive coordinator. So it was a good experience for him, I would say. How do you think he fared? Do you think he made improvements? Do you think maybe he took a step in the right direction after the first game in which he was just a little hesitant to pull the trigger and maybe too quick to bail the pocket? Did you see any notable improvements or anything that you liked or disliked in terms of his performance?
Yeah, so the positive of it was he looked a lot, especially early in the game, he looked willing to throw, you know, through that glance route to Nick Westbrook, Akine. And I want to say he looked more decisive, but I don't know if that's the right term. He looked like when he was running, like he was actually trying to like see downfield and see if there were plays to be made. And, you know, he didn't take, like last week he had that sack in the 2-minute drill where he just should have thrown it out of bounds and just wasn't thinking, and it cost them any chance to put up points or anything like that. That didn't happen, which is good. I think there's fewer mental mistakes this week. Like, there was no throw that was kind of that panicked late throw to Kyle Phillips that he did to start the game against the Ravens. Having said that, like, he does not feel pressure in the pocket correctly, or I guess a better way to say it is he feels pressure when it's not there. And I don't blame him for that. Like, you're playing behind a rotating group of offensive linemen. You know, it's Aaron Brewer snapping the ball for you one play, then it's Corey Levin, then it's, you know, you've got Ruse at right guard, then you've got Jamarco Jones at left. You know, it's like they mixed all that up, and that was just the first week. I mean, this week it was you have Taylor Lewan, then you have DeLauro in for a second, and then you have Lewan back in again, and then you have Nicholas Petit-Frere over there at left tackle, and then it's just a lot of moving parts, and I can understand why he wouldn't be comfortable behind that, especially given his time at Liberty when their offensive line was truly horrendous. And you know, I can understand why if he ever saw a flash of color there, he had to go ahead and scramble and get out, because you know, he wasn't playing with NFL caliber linemen. But man, there's a lot of times where he just runs out of the back of the pocket, and not in the okay, you can get away with that way, where he'll cut underneath a tackle that's creating, you know, that when you make a pocket, your offensive tackles are kick sliding and they're kind of covering this arc. So if you're going to run, it does make sense if that edge rusher gets past the quarterback to cut underneath him and roll towards your dominant arm. But he does the
banana type of scramble where he's just going all the way around.
Right. And it's like he'll be at 5 yards deep, and then he'll just run around and try to outrun the edge. And, I posted a thread about the Raiden's stuff, and we'll talk about that more later. But the problem is that he's getting praised for that on social media, and that's bad. Like, you can't run towards blocked defenders. Like, and if you do run in that area, you've got to do it in a smart way to where you're maximizing what your protection is already doing. Or you're running that way because you see a guy drifting with you that you're going to throw it to once you get to a certain spot. Now, having said, and that's a major issue. Having said that, he did some of those awesome things that he did last week. Like, you know, the 24-yard run or whatever was cool, but it wasn't as cool as the Des Fitzpatrick throw that he made with, you know, the crazy arm angle and all that. And, you know, that was another impressive, okay, this is a throw that five quarterbacks in the NFL can make. Like, one of those types of throws. But for the most part, like, he misses guys a lot. He's I'm confused as to what everybody says when they say he's processing too quickly. I don't know if, because Vrabel's and the other coaches have said that he processes so quickly that his body can't catch up. I don't know if that means he sees things, and then by the time he sees them, he's just not throwing it, because it's not like he's reading things correctly. There's, you know, he throws 17 times, I think, in this last game, and he was 7 of 17 or something like that. Like, there was four or five plays where there was a guy open just pretty clearly that he just doesn't throw the ball to. Everybody talks about the Treylon Burks.
The Burks drag. One. Oh,
yeah, that one's pretty horrible. And, yeah. You know, maybe it's not, you know, a 16-yard touchdown, but it's definitely a first down on 2nd and 7 during a 2-minute drill. Like, and that's important when you have 2 timeouts. Like, he scrambles and throws it to Hassan Haskins, and everybody's talking about that's a great throw, but it's just him making his own life harder, and it doesn't have to be that way. We also didn't see, unless I'm forgetting something, we didn't see any sort of deep connection or anything like we saw last week with the Racy McMath play, which I don't know if that was by design or what, but it sort of feels like, you know, he mistimed a couple of quick throws, one specifically to Kyle Phillips, where he just, it was like Malik Willis was the only one who knew that they were running that play, because nobody ran it like that, which was a strange, just a strange way to run that. So I don't know what exactly they were, I don't know what they were going for in some of these things. I don't know if it's miscommunication on his part, if it's on, I'm going to say the wide receivers, but I would put it more on the offensive coordinator for not making it clear on the sideline that check could be coming, because it was just a very strange miscommunication. But he does not have a lot of feel in the close, you know, within 5 yards. Like, I think it's the first week he kind of rocketed a pass at Torrey Carter, which had no chance. And then, you know, he was scrambling and he threw it to Torrey Carter this time and hit him. But like, I mean, it wasn't complete, but he hit him in the hands kind of on that, on one of those boot plays. And, you know, like, does a wide receiver make that catch? Maybe, but it was a 2-yard catch and you're throwing it as fast as you can to a fullback. That's not something that's going to turn out well most times. So he has a lot of work to do, but I mean, there's also still the same promising things, and it's just going to be a process. It's going to be a lot of, you know, 2 steps forward, 1 step back, like trying to temper when he should run, when, you know, but the only way for him to do that is for him to get reps and to practice and be out there and see it live, because, you know, he's not going to get that on 7-on-7. It's going to have to be in team drills and in preseason and all that. But I'm no more or less optimistic about him than I was before this game. And I do think it's important that he's shown that if there's a concerted effort to throw the ball quickly, he can do that. But it may come at the cost of other things, because that shows that, okay, he can do it. He just wasn't before. Now it's about making sure that you get the most out of what he can do.
Yeah, it's, I agree. I don't, this game didn't change my perception from the first game, and I don't think he's any better or worse off after this performance. I thought he was okay. He did some really good things that still, you know, give you so much hope for the future, just because there are 100 other guys that just cannot do what he does at the quarterback position. But then he kind of struggles with the basic stuff Like we talked about, that throw to Burks, that's so easy, you know, and he just bails too quickly out of the pocket. I feel like he doesn't trust his eyes. Like, he might see something, like he sees Burks wide open or he sees a receiver wide open, but he like doesn't really trust himself to make the throw for whatever reason, which is weird because he has an insane arm and he could fit it really anywhere. But I feel like he's been really cautious in these first couple of games, something that at times at Liberty, I don't think we saw, because he made a lot of really terrible decisions in college. And that was one of the biggest knocks on him, that his processing and his reading of a particular play just didn't really make sense. And he made pretty poor decisions, which led to some bad interceptions. We haven't seen that through these first two games, which is good, because I think the coaching staff has kind of ironed that out of him. But in the process, I think maybe he's being too cautious because he doesn't want to possibly throw an interception. But I think that'll come with time. The problem is, I think it's going to take a good amount of time. It's going to take real growing pains in an NFL game setting. And I just don't know when he's going to get that, because Tannehill's going to be the starter for the whole season unless something drastic happens. But I'm not worried about him. I think it's going along as planned, and I think some of the things that he's shown have actually been really encouraging. So, you know, I'm not fawning over him like a lot of social media has through these first 2 weeks. But obviously it's really exciting when he's doing sidearm throws or running for 25 yard gains. So a lot of good, but also some bad that I think will eventually get ironed out.
Yeah, this is a great time. Just so everybody knows, when we're recording this, you can look up this tweet. Wes on Broadway had a tweet 15 minutes ago that I just saw that said, after two preseason games, Malik Willis has scored both touchdowns and has no turnovers. He's 1 of 13 on third downs. He leads the NFL with 8 yards per run with a minimum of 10 attempts, and he has the lowest completion percentage in the NFL. So that is a perfect representation of what you see. It's like, you know, great. Like, he, you know, he's behind both touchdowns. Like, that's great. He's doing great when he runs the ball and tucks it. That's good. He's also 1 of 13 on third down, which is pretty horrific, and was also something that he was not good at in college. And he's got the lowest completion percentage in the NFL. And I don't think there have been a lot of drops. I don't think there's been any drops, I would probably say. But so, you know, that just goes to show what a process this is. Like, there are highs and lows. And right now, nobody's highs are higher and nobody's lows are lower. So we'll see where this goes from here. But, I mean, he has to do work this season, and then – I don't know any way that they feel comfortable, based off what they've seen this preseason, to move on from Tannehill after this year. So if they do, it's just because they're taking a total leap of faith. And we've seen them do that at other positions. So, you know, maybe they do that here. But I would put, you know, I would press the brakes on Malik Willis being the starter in 2023. Just because we haven't seen anything to say, like, wow. Like, you look at the other rookies, and it's like, you look at Kenny Pickett, and that was the whole narrative coming out, was it's like Kenny Pickett's more pro ready now, and then Ridder and Willis are going to have to take time and develop and all that. And I just think that we have not seen enough to go ahead and guarantee him that spot in the future. But having said that, if they go through preseason next year and he's blowing the doors off of the competition, then they could trade Tannehill and move on that way. But I don't, based off what we've seen, I don't think that's coming unless something changes.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I think they would have to change the whole offense. Like, I think they would have to bring in a new coordinator and kind of redesign the offense, because him, Malik Willis and Tannehill are just, they're not similar. Like, they're completely different types of quarterbacks. Tannehill just stands in the pocket. He will take a hit If he sees a receiver that's open or even one that's semi-open, he's going to hang in the pocket and he's going to deliver a strike. That's the kind of quarterback he is. He's also athletic and can scramble at times, but that's not really his number one goal. Willis is kind of the complete opposite, where right now he just wants to scramble and make a play outside of the pocket. And even when the pocket's collapsing just a little bit, he will bail and he just will not stay in there. So it's tough. Like, I don't think Willis could just come into this offense right now as it is during the regular season and just perform like Tannehill has over the past couple of seasons. But we'll see. Maybe we're wrong.
Yeah.
The last thing I just want to say about Willis, because I feel like I've been pretty negative towards him, but I don't think this is a fair way to evaluate him because, yeah, the backup offensive line is not good. It's not good anywhere in the NFL. Like, every quarterback has to deal with this, but it's pretty bad. They give up a lot of pressure, and I don't know how he would do with the starting offensive line up there and the starting receiver, starting tight ends, Derrick Henry. Like, it could look completely different. And I also personally don't think he's getting much help from his offensive coordinator. I haven't seen anything particularly encouraging from Todd Downing this preseason. Obviously, he's not going to give away stuff in the preseason that he might use in the regular season, but he hasn't necessarily been putting Malik Willis in a great position to succeed. And despite that, Willis has looked pretty good. So I think that's pretty encouraging for him.
Yeah, and they'd have to get faster. Like, they just the way this offense is built now is for 8-play drives, and that's not to say that they won't take like a deep shot every now and then, because we've seen in practice, like the Racy McMath especially, but Treylon Burks has gotten some of that, and you know, they've had different guys make plays that were 40, 50 yard, you know, touchdowns that weren't just 10 yard slants that turned into those plays. So I think we expect more of that this year, but that's what Malik Willis did. Like, in college, he was so good at those deep down the sideline passes. And, you know, you look at his heat map and it's just like ice cold in the middle of the field, you know, outstanding on the outside. And that's great. Like, you know, but that's not how this team is structured. I mean, this team is structured for, you know, 4-yard run, 7-yard run, 14-yard pass, 3-yard run, play action, 48-yard pass, and then 3 plays in the red zone. Like, that's what this team is. And it's what this team will almost guaranteed, is almost guaranteed to always be this with Vrabel, because Vrabel's talked about how much he does not want to pass the ball. Like, he does not like to throw the ball more than 30 times a game. In fact, I don't think he likes to throw it more than 25 times a game. And he's talked about how, you know, when people talk about, well, Aaron Rodgers does this, and he talks about, yeah, but they have good running backs there. And, you know, he always talks about the running game regardless of who the quarterback is. So it would have to be a pretty fundamental shift in philosophy for them to perfectly equip an offense and design it around what Malik Willis does well. And that's always been the concern. But, you know, just because Malik Willis did something well in college doesn't mean that he's incapable of doing something well in the NFL. He just needs time to see if he can do that. And if he can't, you've got to try to change it, or you've got to pick a different quarterback, or you've got to just accept the fact that he may not be as effective as he could be if you put him in those kind of situations.
Yeah, but I think we can put to rest all the Malik Willis should start that movement. It's just too much, man. He's not ready, and Tannehill is still the guy. But moving on from that, let's talk a little bit about the right tackle position. Dylan Radunz had the worst game in human history, according to a lot of Titans fans. I'll be honest, when I initially watched this game, yeah, it looked pretty rough. He had a couple of plays where it looked like he was just getting beaten pretty badly. I even rewatched the game today, kind of focusing on him, but also focusing on other things. And I thought he was meh, you know. I still thought it was a pretty poor game overall. But then you directed me towards your thread on Twitter, which showed all of his snaps, and I feel good now. So if you want to kind of tell the listeners what that thread was about, how Dylan Raiden's played, was he as bad as everyone is saying? Let everyone know.
Yeah, so y'all can go find this if you'd like. If for some reason you don't follow me, it's at JLomas72. Yeah, so I just basically went, because everybody was there was a narrative out there from people who watch football. Like, not, you know, usually if people talk and they don't know what they're talking about, I ignore it. I say my piece and go. But people that understand what they look at were talking about how bad Raiden's was. And I watched it live, and I didn't feel strongly one way or another. And so I was like, okay, I wake up every morning at, this is not like a rise and grind thing, but just because of the schedule I have, I wake up every morning at 5:30, and you know, I'm usually it somewhere where I can, you know, pay attention and work on stuff around 6:15. So I sat there and I watched, and I said, okay, like, let me go through every single play that Dylan Raiden's had at right tackle and see what's up. So I clipped up every single one, and I went through, and there are 26 plays, and I came away feeling like he did exactly what he was supposed to do or went above and beyond on 23 of the 26 plays. And three plays, there was one bad play, which is the one where he, like, he takes this defensive end, and it's kind of a wide nine-ish, like, it's a wide C-gap rush, and he goes around the tight end, and Raiden's has to kick all the way outside, and he's trying to stay square, and then the edge gets around his downfield shoulder, and so he kind of dives at him to not cut block him, but to basically to give Malik Willis as much time as he can, because he knows he can't get there. And that's effective enough. It's obviously not what you want, but but that was one of the three he didn't do well. And then there was one where there was a miscommunication on, you know, whether there was supposed to be a line slide or whether it was a screen pass. It was the Dez Fitzpatrick awesome throw from Malik Willis. But there's some weird stuff that went on there. And then there's one play where he just doesn't get all of a linebacker, and it still turns into, like, I think a positive, you know, 1 or 2 yard gain on the ground, but it's nothing. It was nothing egregious. Like, for the most part, he did a really good job. But people, you know, I played offensive line, I've coached offensive line. Like, I know what it's supposed to look like. I would say to a pretty, I don't have a master's degree in it, but I know what things are supposed to look like. So I can tell when things aren't, I can tell when somebody's doing something wrong. And for the most part, you know, if four guys are doing one thing and one guy's doing another thing, it's usually that guy doing stuff wrong. And there just weren't those plays. So I went through and I watched it, and Raiden's did well. So I broke down every play, and I explained what he's doing on each play, and I put video with it so that people didn't have to try to scrub through NFL Plus and figure out what, you know, where he was and squint and turn there. You know, I tried to do as much of that work as I could, because, you know, you shouldn't be asked to watch offensive line in a preseason game like that. That's, you've got better uses of your time. But for me, who, you know, talks about it and writes about it, it was important to me to know what I was talking about when I was talking about this. And long story short, I've had a lot of comments on it, a lot of retweets, and people saying, you know, that they didn't understand what was happening as much until they saw the clips, and they saw that and they felt different, and they were glad that they watched that. And I encourage everybody to go watch it. But having said all that, it's basically that Raiden's did a B-plus job. Like, I mean, he played against a pretty good front in Tampa Bay after a week where, you know, he had played a lot. You know, that they could have rested him, but guys like him and Nicholas Petit-Frere and Rashad Weaver, like, because they're thin and they have, you know, veterans resting at certain positions, they've got to play big stretches of time. So, you know, he went out there and did his job for the most part and did well. And I came away more impressed with him there than, you know, a lot of people did. You know, I don't want to say that I'm higher on him or as high on him as people are low on him, but there's nothing there that says that he can't be an NFL tackle. Like, you know, there's a lot of encouraging stuff that he does. And if you want to talk about his pass protection, he does good in pass protection. Like if you watch his feet in relation to the hash marks, like he stays where he's supposed to. And even though it can look deceptive on film, he is where he's supposed to be. And if you watch those hash marks, you see that he's actually keeping the pocket, but because there's a line shift one way or because the defense moves a certain way, it looks like there's pressure, but there's really not. Like, I mean, there's nobody around Malik Willis on a lot of these plays. And if there are guys around Malik Willis, it's not because of him. It's because stuff going on the left side of the line. So it was good to see that. And I don't want people to rely on Pro Football Focus numbers. I think I don't think it's lazy to use PFF, but I think if you use PFF, you have to understand that they're not assigning their best guy to watch preseason offensive line tape for the Titans. I can promise you he watched it or she watched it once and just wrote stuff down and moved on. Because who cares? Like, there's no governing body for PFF. They can write whatever. They could write that, you know, Ryan Tannehill went out there and spiked the ball three times in a row, and nobody would check it. And if they checked it, they wouldn't correct it. They would just leave it up there. Like, because what are you going to do? Like, if you're already subscribed to them, you've already paid for a year. Like, you'll forget about it by the next time it rolls around. They don't care too much about it. So accuracy is no longer their priority. Their priority is getting your money and then hooking you for the season. And then you'll be so hungry for football next year that you'll buy a subscription to it and be disappointed all over again. And they'll write enough articles over the offseason about how this player scored super high in this premium stat that you can only see if you're subscribed, that, you know, your favorite team has somebody who's actually the best at their position. And isn't that interesting that everybody seems to have one of those? So I don't know. That's a long way of saying Dylan Raiden's looked good.
Yeah, I love how that morphed into a PFF Stop the Nonsense segment. But I wasn't gonna name drop them. I don't think they deserve it after some of the stuff they've done over the years, and especially this offseason. Man, they're struggling. But I mean, I didn't want to go into the PFF thing, but honestly, do we really think that they have that many people working for them or interning for them that they're watching every single player on the Titans for an entire duration of a preseason game? There's no chance. But anyway, to go back to the Raiduns thing, yeah, your thread was awesome. It really helped me at least see some of the nuances of playing right tackle that we really don't see when we're just watching the game casually, especially some of these miscommunications that hypothetically should be cleared up if he's playing with the starting offensive line right beside him in Nate Davis and even a tight end in Jeff Swaim or Austin Hooper on the side of him. So I don't know. Like, I think he did pretty well, all things considered. The problem is that when he has negative plays, they're really negative. Like, they look bad. They might not be like disastrous. Some of them are, but they look bad, and that's what people see. Like, if you're watching a game and you see a horrific rep from one player, particularly on offensive linemen, you're gonna be like, "Oh my God, he got absolutely destroyed on this play," and then that's gonna stick with you because you don't see the other 20 plays where he's just doing his job. I think this happens also with cornerbacks. That they get burnt. This happened to me with Farley. This happened to me with Caleb Farley in this game too, because he got burned on one play by Scotty Miller, just got absolutely smoked. And like, this has happened to him in the past and it's kind of stuck with me. Like, he will get caught. But I was rewatching the game today and I was like, man, he did a pretty good job. Like, he had one pass breakup. He might have had another one. I'm not, I don't actually remember, but he had a pretty solid overall game, and that's kind of what happened to me with Radens as well. I also think it's important to note that Radens is coming from an FCS college. Like, this is – he was a developmental prospect that I think we didn't, like, look at him as such. I think we thought he was just going to come in and play right away. But, like, that's not a plausible thing when you're coming from North Dakota State. I don't care that they're the top team in Division I FCS. Like, they are not an SEC school. Like, he doesn't go up against SEC type of pass rushers on a daily basis in college. And it was always going to take some time to get used to it. But he's fine. Like, he's not as bad as people make him out to be.
Yeah, and there's a couple other things that also contribute to this. One is.
I did want to mention one more thing. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just to interrupt real quick. I think it's really important. I mentioned that he's playing with the backups. He's also playing with a backup quarterback in Malik Willis, who absolutely loves to run the ball. And how is Raiden supposed to know when Malik Willis is just scrambling around? And especially when he does it so quickly, like 2 to 3 seconds into the play, Raiden's is still trying to maybe hold his block, and Willis has already evaded or gone outside of him, and the pass rusher just comes right off him. And it looks like Raiden's lost the rep when that's not really the case.
Yeah, and that kind of feeds into one of the things is that if there's already a ton of eyes on the right tackle position, and whether Nicholas Petitfrere has started or been the backup or whatever, there have not been that many reps of him in pass protection on the right side by himself. So, like, if somebody's going to get beat, it's going to be Raiden's because he's had to do it more. What makes it even more difficult is that Malik Willis rolls to his right. Like, that's how he rolls to pass. Like, he's not going to roll against his body. So even if there's a clean pocket and he's bailing, he's going to bail to the right regardless of whether there's pressure or not. So he's going to run right past 75 that's facing the camera. So all you're going to see is quarterback boots out, big number 75 in your face, and then a guy chasing him. But the guy was on the other side of 75, like blocked, but now he's closer to Malik Willis than anybody else because Malik Willis ran past his protection. And so it's not like it's neither here nor there because they're trying to fix that. But it's just why this misconception happens is, you know, he runs like that and is just athletic enough to get away from what should have been a sack. But all you think is like, man, Malik Willis did a really good job because the guy 75 was blocking, just, you know, had him around the legs and he managed to get away. And it's like, well, not so fast. Like, you know, that's not exactly how it happened. But, you know, the problem is if you people love hope, right? Like Titans fans, every NFL team, you know, they love hope, and nothing is more hopeful than a backup quarterback, especially a young backup quarterback. And so it's hard to say anything bad about Malik Willis, and it's especially hard to say that when you're trying to explain why something happened. So if you say Dylan Raiden's actually blocked this correctly, but Malik Willis ran towards the pressure, all people hear you say is Malik Willis sucks. And it's like, it's not that. It's more nuanced than that. Like, even the 24-yard run he had was cool, but he ran right towards where Raiden's had mashed a defensive tackle inside so that the guy that should have been in the B gap got pushed all the way into the other A gap and was just standing there. And then he was there to kind of provide a wall in case that guy came. So he had to take a different angle. And like, if Raiden's hadn't done his job, that's a 2-yard gain, but he's not going to get any credit because it's not like he's lead blocking out in front of Malik Willis because it was a pass play. Like, I mean, he can't run 10 yards down the field and try to be up there and then Malik Willis pull it and throw it, because then it's like everybody look at the stupid offensive lineman. So, you know, all that to say, like, and this is it, what Raiden's did has no bearing on whether or not Nicholas Petitfrere did a good job at right tackle. I think he did a good job at right tackle. I think Nicholas Petitfrere at right tackle did a better job on Saturday than Dylan Radins did at right tackle. I don't think that about week one in the preseason. And I think Nicholas Petitfrere has been truly awful at left tackle when they played him there. But that's fine. Like, 2023, the plan I've said since this, you know, this past draft, the plan should be Dylan Radins left tackle, Nicholas Petitfrere right tackle. And that still looks like it's fine. But for this year, only one of them is going to start. And it seems like nobody's going to be happy either way.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels. But Titans fans should be happy anyway, because whoever starts, it'll be because they earned it, because they beat the other one out. And if either them or Luan goes down, you have a really capable backup tackle to just slot right in. So things can be worse, man. We have other things, more pressing things to worry about, really. Things like Treylon Burks not getting the ball, even though he keeps getting open. But I don't want to spend too much time on that. We talked about it a lot last week. I think once the season starts, we're going to see that Treylon Burks is actually very good and has been getting open and can get open. And hopefully Tannehill will be able to get him the ball. I think he will, because Tannehill has done that in the past with most of the receivers that he's played with. One other thing I wanted to talk about was the cornerbacks. I touched a little bit on Caleb Farley. Yeah, I mean, when I was watching the game initially, I didn't like how he was playing, to be honest. But after the rewatch, I thought he did a very good job. The problem is that Roger McCreary is also doing a really good job in the preseason. He's not getting the ball thrown at him because he's that good, and he just doesn't get beat by, you know, receivers that are less talented than he is. So that's good. What do you think? Who's going to start? Like, who do you think is going to start a quarter? Is it just going to be Fulton Farley on the outside and then Molden in the slot? Or is there a chance that McCreary can play instead of one of them?
So comparing the Nicholas Petitfrere, Dylan Radins matchup to the Caleb Farley, Roger McCreary situation is so interesting, because it's almost an identical story, right? So it's, you have a guy with a lot of potential that was drafted in 2021 who didn't get to start, one because of injury and one because of a love affair with David Quessenberry. Then they show flashes, but they're still very much developmental guys who should progress. But the guy that they drafted, you know, the Titans this year drafted for depth. They drafted because they got so injured last season that they wanted to make sure that they weren't put in that situation again. You know, it's part of why the A.J. Brown trade makes sense with what they did with the picks, and why they just didn't draft purely wide receivers, is because they want to make insulate the roster so much from, okay, they're good, but if they get one injury there, they're in trouble. And now they're kind of there. Like, it's where you want to be. But the problem is that comes at the expense of having that time to develop those guys. So I think before the draft, Radins would have started right tackle, no questions. I think Farley would have started outside, and it would have been Fulton and Molden in the middle. Then the season started, and it looked like it was going to be a competition between Molden and McCreary for that slot job. Well, then Molden gets hurt early in the early in training camp. So now that opens the door for McCreary to play more in the slot and all that. He does an awesome job there. So great. Okay. Like, maybe let's try him on the outside. And they try him in Farley's spot, and he looks great there. Okay. Well, now you've got a guy who can, as far as I know, the only guy on the team with true inside outside versatility. He's young. He's gotten rave reviews from the coaches. You know, they've talked about, they've said, you know, he's not a rookie, which is a crazy thing for this coaching staff to say. Like, they're still talking about guys. It took Amani Hooker like 3 years to like not just be a special teamer, and he was outstanding when he got time on the field. But McCreary is so beloved by this coaching staff that, you know, they're just they're like, this is our guy. So they love him. And I think Kyle Phillips is going to get that kind of respect and admiration from the coaching staff too, when it's all said and done. But I think what's happened now, if they had to start people tomorrow, is, and this is what they did some in the Tampa Bay game, is I think they want their two starting corners to be Christian Fulton and Roger McCreary. Then on nickel situations, I think they want Roger McCreary to go inside to the slot, and then Caleb Farley to come and be the other boundary corner. Then the Titans ran more dime packages than anybody else in the NFL last year. So a fourth corner slash safety or whatever is more valuable to them than any other team in the league. That's where I think Molden comes in, and Molden is their not, I don't know if I'd call him a safety, like a tight end matchup guy, but I think he will be their, you know, quote unquote linebacker, their guy in the box who is a defensive back who can cover if he needs to. And I don't know if that will change based on who they play, but this rookie class has been so impressive that it's basically throw all the rules we had for rookies out the window, because at any time they've been given the slightest chance to start, they've kicked down the door and haven't looked back. Like Treylon Burks, we don't talk about him, but he went from being a guy that they weren't sure if they were going to play in the slot or what, to he has not missed a practice. He got injured in a practice and came back the next day in joint practices and competed again. He's played more snaps than anybody else on offense during. Now, I don't know this for a fact. I shouldn't say it like that, but I believe he's played more snaps as a skill position player than anybody else on the Titans roster to this point in the preseason. And since he has not missed a practice, and since he's been we know he's been working with the first, second, and third strings, we know that he's gotten a lot of practice reps. So all of a sudden, the freak from the SEC whose biggest problem was he's not conditioned is playing more snaps than anybody else, and he's getting reps with the ones, and he's their, you know, only real starting wide receiver with big play potential down the field. Like, he's going to get as many or more snaps per game than A.J. Brown did as a rookie. Then you've got Kyle Phillips, that we've talked about, and we could go on and talk about this rookie class, and it feels like we've talked a lot about them this preseason. But the reason that's so important is because McCreary starting for Mike Vrabel in any other season would have been no chance. It would have been they're going to line up with Farley, Molden, and Fulton, and until either Molden or Fairley get beaten so bad that they just can't, you know, that they have to be removed, it's veterans over rookies. But I just don't, I mean, McCreary's first play of the preseason game was a tackle on special teams. Like, if that's not going to endear you to Vrabel, I don't know what is. So I think he's the guy who's primed to start opposite Fulton if I had to pick one today.
Definitely interesting. Tough decision for the coaching staff, but thankfully they have a lot of options. Like, man, it just goes back to the conversation we were having at the beginning, just the amount of depth that they have at a lot of these positions. Cornerback is absolutely one of them. They're four deep, maybe even five deep with, well, Chris Jackson is injured now, but they just signed Lonnie Johnson, and Lonnie Johnson looks good. So, yeah, I don't know. They're very deep at a lot of positions, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And I agree with you about the rookies. This looks like one of John Robinson's best rookie classes. I think it was kind of a return to form in terms of drafting success for him. Obviously, there's a lot left to go, but I could see almost this entire draft class being starters at their positions. Maybe not for the Titans, but throughout their NFL careers for sure. So that's really exciting, and, you know, can't wait to see some of them in action. I mean, even Chigakonkwo is probably going to take a lot of reps from Jeff Swaim as a tight end too. He looks like a really solid, just a really solid tight end already. So yeah, definitely exciting. Real quick, the Titans wrap up their preseason. I don't even know their preseason campaign, playing against the Cardinals on Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. What do you want to see in that game, or do you just not want to see anything? You just want to see these lower level guys get out there and no one gets injured, and we just pack it in for the regular season?
No, I think they still have things that they need to figure out. Also, they're doing something weird with the joint practices where I don't want to say chickening out or anything. They're just trying to make sure guys don't get hurt. But they're like, all right, we had a joint practice. We thought we could do two back-to-back, but probably not. So now they're only going to do one this week, and it's on Wednesday, and they're not doing one on Thursday. And the one they do on Wednesday is going to be different than the one they did versus Tampa, where it's not as much like team stuff. And then sometimes they're just going to kind of go in a corner and each team's going to practice by themselves. It's a really stupid thing to do. Like, if you're going to do that, just cancel the joint practice, because you're not getting anything out of it. At least in my mind. The only thing I want to see, other than like some guys competing for like true, like, because Malik Willis should start the whole game. Like, there should be no difference in him. So I'd like to see progression there. But I would also like to see, you know, like, can they do things to get a little bit more creative without giving up the entire playbook? Because I don't know, like, you don't have to be as vanilla. Like, why don't you just script something, like just a quick like 8-10, because Lord knows that they need help scripting plays for offense. So like, why not work on that and just say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to script these plays, and you know, we're going to do it to attack the Cardinals, so that we look like a competent coaching staff. Like, do that, and do it with Malik Willis, and do it with him in mind. Just, you have a taste of what it's going to look like in the future if he's your starter. And on defense, somebody mentioned this. I don't know if it was Amani Hooker or who it was, but somebody mentioned that the Titans got a really good mix of offenses that they got to see this preseason. So they got to see the heavy sets from Baltimore with the two tight ends and the fullbacks and the three tight ends and all the stuff they do. Then they got to see a more normal, like, almost like Tennessee Titans, like similar personnel grouping with Tampa Bay. And then they're going to get to see a spread offense with the Cardinals. So I want to see what they do versus those four wide receiver sets. Like, is this where you're going to find out, okay, Molden can play this slot and then McCreary is going to play this slot, or, you know, how they attack that after they really struggled to open with it last year. So that's something to monitor and to watch. But other than that, it's the whole standard. Like, we don't want anybody to get injured. We want to see people take steps, but specifically those things.
Yeah, I think it's another situation where the joint practices are probably going to be more important than the actual game. I'm not expecting a lot of starters to play in the game. Do you think any starters are going to play other than like Radens and Petit Freer? I don't know. I don't remember what they did last year, which was the first year, I think, with three preseason games.
You know, I seem to remember them playing their starters.
Did they play Tannehill?
Am
I crazy?
I don't remember.
I'm going to look it up while you talk.
Go ahead and look it up, because I know that when they played the Steelers, that Tannehill played in that game. But he was the backup at that time, because that was the last one before COVID. But I remember that being like just a kind of a long day for him and that backup offensive line, because that was the first game.
I'm wrong. What side and Barkley? Oh my God, Matt Barkley. I forgot he was on the team. Barkley played. Henry didn't
Don't laugh
play.
Too much. Like, they might cut Woodside back Barkley. Like, you know, and after what we've seen from Woodside, who's basically played himself out of a free paycheck, like, I would completely understand why they did it. But I mean, I think they play their starting offensive linemen some. I think they have in the past. Like, at this point, like, if you're not going to play them before now, like, I don't know what what good it does for them to play three snaps in this game. So if you're going to play him a little bit and pull him out. But if you're not going to, you know, if you're just going to play him for a drive, like don't, you know, don't worry about it too much. Like just go ahead and like keep him fresh and, you know, keep everybody healthy and ready to go, especially after Kayvon Thibodeau almost like got hurt and all that stuff on that block. It's like, you don't want to get this far just to have somebody get injured and then have to kind of hit the panic button.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick ad break here and we're going to wrap up with Stop the Nonsense.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back in as we go through Stop the Nonsense. Will, do you want to go first as always?
Yeah, so I guess it was 2 years ago at this point. Tom Brady came out with that barbershop interview where they talked about, you know, I think the quote is something like, you know, there's a team that I was talking to that, you know, we were getting pretty close to a decision and they were in the mix heavy. And then all of a sudden they pulled out and I said, they're going to stick with that mother cuss word over me. Like, I don't know if we're doing explicit stuff, but and everybody said that they thought that was Ryan Tannehill. They were like, that's Tannehill. It's got to be Tannehill because that's who they were going to sign. It's got to be Tannehill. It's got to be Tannehill. Well, finally, after 2 years, we finally know that who he was really talking about was Carr, because this was when John Gruden stepped in and vetoed a deal that basically would have had Tom Brady with the as the first quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders when they moved. And it was the year that, you know, everybody knows Tom Brady went to Tampa and they won their Super Bowl in their first year. But you know, he was almost the first quarterback in Las Vegas. Like, Dana White and a bunch of other people were like offering him the world. And, you know, they were going to do everything. They were going to bend over backwards to make him comfortable. And they were talking about, you know, you're 45 minutes from LA. And Gronkowski had him on something, had Dana White on something, like talking to him, and he told the story. And so now, finally, after 2 years, all the people who were dead set and couldn't be convinced that Tom Brady was talking, you know, it was pure gospel to them that it had to have been Tannehill and that Mike Vrabel was stupid for sticking with Tannehill, blah, blah, blah. And at last we know that it was not, you know, this was not Tom Brady bashing Tannehill, whether he likes him or not. I don't know. I can't speak to that, but at the very least I can rest assured in the fact that it wasn't him talking about Tannehill.
Yeah. I find it funny that it was Derek Carr because I don't know. I think he's super overrated. And I think I saw he was on the top 100 list. He was pretty high on it too. Yeah, not like, that list think, matters. Let's be honest.
Yeah. It's just how many Raiders got to vote that year. But you know, it's just like, whether you think he's overrated or underrated, you're right. Like he is a very much a system quarterback who's good enough to, I mean, he's not Joe Flacco, but he's kind of Joe Flacco. So kind of, like, yeah.
Matt
so
Ryan,
like
they're all the same. All
yeah. The same guy. Yeah. Like if you put him with a really smart offensive mind, he will work that system. If you put him with a dumb offensive mind, he'll work that system. Like, you're going to get what you surround him with, which is why they should be pretty excited about this year, because they've got good talent and, I mean, a supposedly good offensive mind in Josh McDaniels. So we'll see what happens. But it's very interesting to me to hear people talk about Carr now. I can never remember if it's David or Derek. It's Derek, but I can never remember until I have to think it out.
Yeah, so I'll wrap up with my stop the nonsense. I have Warren Sharp as my stop the nonsense. I'm sure you guys all know him, at Sharp Football on Twitter. He's essentially just PFF personified. They're like the same type of scam. They keep throwing out numbers even though they don't mean anything. And he's had a couple doozies over the past 2 days that I would like help understanding why these numbers matter. So the first one was an XY graph. Usually when you have an XY graph, as you go more to the top right of the graph, like, that means like you're the top player, you know, at a certain thing. So he has Malik Willis as like one of the best quarterbacks of the preseason, which is good, but this graph just doesn't make any sense to me. So the y-axis is, or x-axis, I actually don't know, I'm kind of dumb, but the one that's going horizontal is average time to throw, and it goes from 2.2 to 4. So obviously Malik Willis is really has a long time to throw because he's scrambling all the time and doesn't get rid of the ball quickly. And then on the vertical axis, he has air yards per attempt. So Malik Willis apparently has over 10 air yards per attempt, which is really good. But isn't that just logical that the more time you take to throw, the farther down the field the receivers are going to be and the farther your actual attempts are going to be? Like, I don't understand how this matters really in any way. I guess all it could really like signify is that you're giving your receivers more time to get down the field and you're throwing it deep. So I guess that's good. But I mean, Malik Willis had like 4.7 yards per attempt in the second game. So that was weird. I don't know what that graph was about. And then today he had another tweet with something that's just very logical, but he makes it seem like it's groundbreaking. He tweeted, "I was talking to a coach today about improving opening drive production." And then he cites league-wide last year, if an opening drive had zero plays of 15-plus yards, you had a 12.5% score rate and a 5.6% touchdown rate. If an opening drive had one plus plays of 15 plus yards, you had a 68% score rate, 48% touchdown rate. Efficiency and explosiveness balanced together. Yeah, we know. Like, if you get farther down the field, you're obviously going to have a better rate to score or score a touchdown. Like, I don't understand. He's not breaking any news here, but he does this all the time. He spews out stats that are supposed to mean something, but they never really mean anything. And he is just, he's getting on my nerves, honestly.
I mean, it's like if you said, like, this team averages the most plays per drive in the NFL, and they score the most points per drive. And it's like, yeah, like, that would probably, like, you know, on the whole, I'm guessing that would make sense, because if you're getting, you know, more plays, you're getting more yards, you're having success. Like, but if you're averaging four, you know, unless you're an incredible outlier and explosive plays, like, some of the stuff, it's weird, because you talk about that Malik Willis thing, and it's like, you could invert that, like, it just in like time to throw and all that, and you could say, like, these, because I'm sure it'll happen, and like, but it's like, these quarterbacks get the ball out quicker than anybody else, and it's like, okay, like, so is do you want more time to throw? Like, because that leads to more yards per attempt, or like more air yards per attempt. And if explosive plays are good, like, isn't that what you should want? Like, it, cause at the end of the day, it's always like, well, you want a healthy mix of this with a specialist. It's like, yeah, like, we know, like, that, like, I don't need, somebody said, I don't remember what it was, but they said, I didn't need a test for the thing you needed a test to figure out. Like, it, you know, like I already knew that ahead of time. So, you know, it's people want to innovate and they want to do things that are original and they want to kind of break the NFL down into numbers and figure out how it really works. And there's some of that that's smart and logical, but there's a lot of it. And it's the people who think that stats are predictive and not descriptive. Those people are the ones who misuse analytics and make everybody look stupid because they end up with the Jaguars as their favorite for the Super Bowl for some stupid reason. And then they can never be credible again.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You're spot on. Meanwhile, I'm going to be creating my own stats. I'm going to have big time plays, and it's going to be any play that is over 18.5 yards because that's very predictive of everything. And you have to be specific with these stats because if not, they don't mean anything, of course. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. We're going to be back after the Titans play the Cardinals in the final preseason game to kind of wrap that up and then start looking ahead to, well, actually, they have to do cutdowns, right? I'm not exactly sure what day the cutdowns are, but it'll happen sometime within the next week, I believe, and we'll come back to you with all that information.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.